Dave and Dujanovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
Whoops. Happy Friday, Greg Skordas. Thank you so much for sitting in today for Dave Noriega, who has the day off. It's a perfect day to have you here in studio with me.
Because of the weather?
Because the weather is perfect.
Beautiful.
It is gorgeous today. But more importantly, there's so much political drama going on.
And legal.
Right.
And legal.
Political
and legal. I love this stuff.
Which is totally your forte. This is your lane because you've been an attorney in Utah forever.
42 years.
And you've also been heavily involved in politics over the years.
0-for-3 in my political races.
You've run three political campaigns and lost
all three.
That's because you're a Democrat.
Okay, thank you.
That's the only way. A Democrat living in Utah, good luck. Let's get right to our top political story.
Utah's top political story. Special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
I love that the Deseret News chased this, Greg. Chased the story, the follow-up, after the political drama that unfolded at the GOP convention last weekend. Let me set the scene for you. Representative Celeste Molloy, recently elected during a special election to the House of Representatives. Good for her.
She's only been in office for less than 6 months.
Less than 6 months. She's speaking out to the Deseret News about Senator Mike Lee endorsing her opponent going into the GOP convention last weekend.
And at the last minute. I mean, it wasn't even... She didn't have much time to prepare or to know what was going to happen. Now, you know, our delegation meets once a week for breakfast up at the Capitol, I'm told, when they're in session, the Senate and the congressional leaders. So I wonder what breakfast is going to be like this week up there.
Because Senator Lee and Molloy will both be there.
Yeah, that's what they do. They have these meetings.
Okay.
Utah's delegation.
So I'll just put this out there right away. I think what Senator Mike Lee did to Representative Molloy was terrible. I thought it was terrible. Last minute endorses her opponent, and then gets on stage with this guy Colby Jenkins, and she says is campaigning for him all day long to the 4,000. Delegates at the convention here in downtown Salt Lake City to convince the delegates that Molloy needs to go. We need to toss her to the curb. And the delegates are like, yeah, you're right.
And so she needs to get at least 40% to get out of convention. Because if you get 60%,
okay,
you're the candidate.
So there's math involved here.
Right, 60%. So you need 40-1 to avoid being ousted. Or, Debbie, you can gather signatures. And for that particular race, Celeste would have needed to gather 7,000 signatures. She decided not to go the signature route. I wonder.
So she could go out and this is what we've been talking about on the show.
Right.
She could go out into the community and send her team out there to gather signatures. She would automatically get on the primary ballot in June. Okay.
Right. Had she known, in my guess, had she known that Lee was going to sandbag her at the last minute and endorse her opponent, she may have taken a different route. She may have gathered signatures. And I think what was unfair is what you're talking about. And that is that this endorsement sort of came at the last minute. And she
has no chance now of gathering signatures, right?
She's too late for that.
It's way too late.
So she barely makes the ballot. She'll be on the primary ballot. She got 43%. I'm sure she was hanging by a thread. So she's on the ballot.
She's sweating it out, yeah.
Right. And her opponent gets 57. And by all accounts, a very qualified candidate. But you're right. The timing of this... The fact that they're so close, they work so closely together.
Right.
The fact that she's not even a freshman congressperson. I mean, she's so new that she's still...
She's getting her legs under her back in Congress.
Of course,
she was served under Representative Chris Stewart.
Right.
But the Deseret News really giving us some really juicy details about what happened because they spoke with Molloy. And she said to the Deseret News that Lee didn't tell her he was going to endorse Colby Jenkins, her opponent. Nor has he called her since. Lee owe her a phone call?
Well, I think it's going to be a little uncomfortable next time they run into each other, and they are going to see each other on Capitol Hill.
Do you think he owed her a phone call before
Oh, absolutely.
He pulled the, He pulled that move to.
You can't blindside your friends like that. You know what I mean? I mean, and he had his reasons for doing it. I'm not criticizing his decision, but his timing and his failing to announce that or to give her at least a little heads up was unfortunate.
Well, it sounded to me from everything I read, he didn't like the way she was voting.
Yeah, he was concerned about some of her votes and thought that she'd crossed the aisle too many times to try to compromise and work with the Democrats.
I appreciated that she stood up to him, saying something to the effect of, "Look, I'm going to vote the way I see things, and I won't, you know, be swayed, not even by a senator.
By senators, right?
Why would we have separate representation in Congress if everybody was getting on the same bandwagon
all the time?
You know, why would we have different elected officials?
And you have to think, Debbie, that an endorsement by Mike Lee is about as important and compelling as of an endorsement as you can get at the Utah State Republican Convention, short of Donald Trump himself. You know what I mean? I think that that's a very powerful endorsement. And for her to have to deal with that, especially like you say, at the last minute, had to be difficult. I was told just from people that were there that she was really upset about it, she was very concerned.
So I saw this from a female perspective right away, and I got beat up on Twitter when I posted about that. That I saw this as it's just so difficult to get women elected from this state. We need representation back in Congress from all walks of life, all races, all cultural backgrounds, gender backgrounds. We get Celeste Molloy back to Congress. I think she's the fifth woman in Utah history. So I felt like Lee coming in and slam dunking over her head like that at the last minute. It sent a message to me as a woman that once we get a woman elected to office, boy, they sure seem to run into all kinds of issues.
That's the more compelling
thing. We start hating on
them. Right. It's hard enough to get women to run. But like you just said, once we have prominent women in Utah in positions of politics, they get beat up, I think, more than their male counterparts, and unfairly more.
So you have a personal experience with this. By the way, Greg scored us in today for Dave Noriega. Greg, host of KSL at night. You hear him every night right here. Not every night, but almost every night, 7 to 9 right here on KSL News Radio. Also, prominent attorney, both defense and former prosecutor. I remember Enid Greenwaldholtz back in the 90s, early 90s, and her husband,
Joel Waldholtz.
I thought Enid was absolutely a rising star.
And she was going huge. She was going miles with the Republicans. She spoke at the national convention, but because
she accidentally gets conned into marrying this guy who pretends to be wealthier than he is. Of course, back in the 90s, you didn't have an easy way to check any of this stuff out and these claims because we didn't really have the internet.
Right.
So she marries this guy, and I felt like she got duped.
They had a child, too. Right.
They had a child together,
Yeah, and because of that seemingly poor judgment on her part, and it wasn't. She was duped
in every way.
She got knocked down.
By the media,
didn't see much of her after that.
No, she's been on this air from time to time, I know, over the years, and I've always had such high respect for her, and we call her up and get her opinion occasionally. I thought she was brilliant. She was a rising star.
She's a brilliant lawyer, too, by the way.
We went after former Salt Lake County Mayor Nancy Workman.
Yes.
You had a hand in that case, too.
She had one term. She was very popular, but she was also the target of the Democrats, and I believe very sincerely, and although I was involved in the case, that her gender had a lot to do with the vitriol that she faced.
30 seconds. How will the Jenkins-Molloy race shake out at the June primary for the Republicans? I've got my opinion on it.
I think Molloy comes out. I think she'll win that race, and I think that the Lyman-Cox thing will be the same way. I think that the fact that somebody wins in the caucus, or excuse me, at the
state
convention with the delegates is not necessarily going to hold on any of some of these races.
So you just brought up the name, candidate for governor, Phil Lyman. You know, he's a Republican nominee. He overwhelmingly wins the delegate support at convention, and now he's landed his battle for his LG candidate in court.
Today.
Over one line in the Utah Constitution, they go to court and face off today. Let's walk through that, defense attorney Greg Scordis. I'd be curious to see how you'd argue it if you were representing Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson, who's being sued over this matter because she said no. Right. Won't allow the LG candidate for lineman on the ballot because of a residency issue. But there's this one line in the Constitution. We're going to talk about that next.
Dave and Dejanovic. Utah's top political story. Special coverage with Dave and Dejanovic.
That's right. The politics, the drama in Utah politics, not ending at all. It's, in fact, heating up. Today in court, later this afternoon, Phil Lyman, Republican nominee for governor, makes it out of convention and launches his campaign post-convention right in smack dab in the middle of a lawsuit. He's going to face off today, suing the lieutenant governor, Deidre Henderson, for not letting his LG candidate on the ballot over a residency battle. Has he lived in Utah for the proper amount of time in the right time frame? He's claimed he's lived in Utah for 30 years. The trouble is, the guy went off apparently to live in Idaho, too. So Lane Bangerter lived in Idaho for a time. Greg Skordas, you're an attorney. Turn up your microphone. There we go.
And when you look at the qualifications for office, for the governor and lieutenant governor, you have to be 30 years of age at the time of election. And importantly, it says that unless at the time of the election that person is a qualified voter and has been a resident citizen of the state for 5 years next preceding the election. So that language, next preceding the election, is in question right now because the lieutenant governor's office is saying that means the 5 years immediately preceding the election.
You think it does?
I think it does. Okay. I think that's what it says. And Lyman's saying it means 5 years.
Anytime
preceding the election.
So he could have been born in Utah.
Lived here for five years,
moved away by the time he hit first grade with his parents. And that would be Lyman. You think that's going to be Lyman's attorney's argument today in court?
Yes. And he's sort of saying, well, he sort of lives here now. He's got this 5 years behind him, and he's trying to say that it shouldn't be a disqualifier, but the language is quite clear in the Utah Constitution. I mean, we're not talking about some legislation that was enacted a couple of years ago. This is the Utah State Constitution.
Well, it's too bad that the founding fathers used such awkward language. I mean, it's not very clear language, right? The state for 5 years next preceding the election. Is that how they talked back then?
I was going to say maybe that's how we talked about it 50 years ago, next preceding the election. I think, don't you think that means in the 5 years preceding the next is awkward?
Do you know what doesn't matter here? What I think. It will matter what the judge thinks
right.
Today. So just hold your thought, Greg, for just a moment. I'm going to, they've made no secret that Lane Bangerter was off in Idaho living up there for a time. I'm going to play a news clip. He was participated in a news interview a few years ago. But I want to ask you what the options are today in court in just a moment. Like, can the judge just slap a restraining order on the action? I know that's probably not the right legal.
That's almost exactly right.
Oh,
yep.
Well, hello. Yep. Hello. I should have been a lawyer. I've been told that many times, but
mainly
because I talk so much. I filibuster the conversations. But I want to get with this news story that aired a couple of years ago when Lane Bangerter was casting ballots out of Idaho, on behalf of the Idaho delegation in favor of Donald Trump.
I am proud to cast all of Idaho's votes, 32 votes, to Donald John Trump.
A lifelong Republican, Idaho farmer, and family man, Lane Bangerter, joined more than 300 other delegates in Charlotte to support President Trump for a second term.
And the date on that story that aired a few years ago, lifelong Republican and Idaho farmer is what the reporter reported there. So you go to court. Let's pretend for just a moment you're representing Lyman in this afternoon.
Right.
This has got to be Exhibit A coming on the part of the state, though, right? Like this news story, I don't know if it'll play in at all, but do you use that at all to show that?
Oh, yeah, of course you do.
Okay, in 2020, this story posted, he does an interview with this news reporter about representing Idaho, casting its ballots in favor of Donald Trump.
Right, and there's another twist to this, and that is that the lieutenant governor herself disqualified the lieutenant governor selection. So there was an arguable conflict. But what she did was she went to Greg Bell, the former lieutenant governor.
I saw that.
And said, look, I'm staying out of this because I'm a candidate myself.
And Greg Bell issued a written opinion.
He issued an opinion himself as the former lieutenant governor, having no say in who wins the election otherwise. And he said, in my opinion, this is not a qualified candidate for lieutenant governor.
So there's two layers to this for me, and that is I don't blame Lyman for going to court. I don't know if he's going to win today. We'll have to see how that works out for him, or he'll get any kind of a ruling today. But because you've got a lieutenant governor telling you no based on the read of the Constitution, and then you've got a former lieutenant governor telling you you want to go get a third opinion. That's all fine. The flip side to this, though, is I don't know why he's so set on Bangeter. Like, if there's any controversy at all regarding this, just get somebody else. There's a ton of people who have lived here.
My guess is, Debbie, that they have been working together. They probably got banners. They probably got signs.
You're right. They probably got
brochures. They probably spent, he claims in his lawsuit that they've spent six figures and that this would waste all of that money. But it sort of begs the question, well, why were you spending that money? Why were you going so far down the road without reading the Constitution in the first place? I mean, we all signed that. I've run for state office. How old are you? I ran for attorney general. Are you an attorney? Have you lived in Utah for the immediate 5 years? Check, check, check. You're on the ballot.
I was glad to talk to candidate Phil Lyman yesterday on the air. We'd been texting back and forth all week long, and he was finally able to carve out some time for us yesterday during the show. And I asked him, if this judge does not rule in your favor, where are you willing to go with this?
You'll get a decision likely from the judge. What are you asking for the judge? What do you want to see from the bench?
A writ of mandamus that requires the lieutenant governor to do what they're required to do, which is to accept the application, first of all.
And are you prepared for the state to appeal that if you're granted that? Are you prepared to take this all the way to the Utah Supreme Court? I guess that's the more direct question.
Well, we're on solid footing in our position, and if the lieutenant governor's office wants to push this all the way to Supreme Court, I guess that would be their decision. In the past, the history has shown that they accept the applications, that they favor the candidate. We're not asking for any favors at all. We just want to file our paperwork, which is our right to do.
Greg, you've spent many, many years in front of a judge. What are the options here for the judge to do today?
Well, I think the judge needs to act quickly. And what Lyman just indicated, he's asking for a writ of mandamus, which is sort of the opposite of a restraining order. It's an order mandating this lieutenant governor to put his lieutenant governor candidate on the ballot. So the judge can and will, because I think he's got to make a decision quickly, make a decision probably today or within a short period of time, either saying to the lieutenant governor's office, you are ordered to put Bangeter's name on the ballot, or he says to Lyman, you lose. He's not qualified under the rule.
And then can it go to the Supreme Court?
Oh, and it will.
You think this will be figured out in front of the Utah Supreme Court?
Ultimately, I think it has to.
Well, I think it does have to happen swiftly as well, because what we've got is a very short runway before the primary in June.
Yep.
And he does, in fairness to him, need to know. I mean, some people might say this is just a frivolous lawsuit. He's going to lose anyway. I don't blame him.
Or a frivolous decision by the lieutenant governor's office to keep somebody off the ballot over what some people might call a technicality. I'm just taking the other side.
Technicality, though, I think the problem here is that the founding fathers just used,
right,
I don't know what dictionary they were using for their next preceding 5 years, and trying to get into their brains now is, well, it's too late.
Right.
It's too late. So that's why we have courts. They try to figure out and interpret what our founding fathers meant when they wrote the state constitution. And just to clarify, this is all under the state constitution,
yes,
right, Greg?
Right. That's what defines legitimacy to run for office in the state of Utah.
Oh, my goodness. I posted on Facebook just a little while ago, Greg, about this controversy.
Uh-oh.
Where a South Dakota governor wrote in her political memoir about several years ago, taking a dog out. Did you hear about this?
Shooting a dog.
Shooting and killing the family dog.
Seemed kind of funny for a book. Maybe not so much now.
Not so much now. I don't think she was expecting the backlash. So I asked our listeners, I said, hey, we're going to put her on blast at 9:35. Post a picture of your dog and tell me why you love your dog so much. So let's get into the controversy and why Senator Mitt Romney is suddenly swooped up in it as well. Next.
Dave and Dejanovic,
your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
Governor of South Dakota Kristi Noem doubling down on taking her dog, she called it a working dog, a dog she hated, to a gravel pit and shooting the thing. Shooting this poor little dog, which she says was a working dog, had destroyed livestock. She claims it had bitten her hand and that it needed to go, Greg. Greg scored us in today for Dave Noriega. Greg is a co-host of KSL at Night and also an attorney. She's doubling down on Twitter. And I thought by now she would recognize that there's not a lot in politics that unites us. Dogs.
Dog, yeah. Bad judgment.
She just figured that
Writing about it in your political memoir, really bad judgment.
Yeah, don't write a book.
Yeah, don't. If you shoot your dog, keep it to yourself. Or don't do it in the first place, but my word, don't put it in your book. And then she sort of makes light of it. Well, the dog was on the roof of the car, or the dog was doing this, it was that, it was nasty and mean and whatever. But a working dog makes it seem even more sympathetic to me.
Oh, you mean, so explain what you mean by more sympathetic.
I mean, it's a working dog. It's a dog that's trained. It's not just Rover, the pet that licks your face every time you walk in the door. It's helping her. It's doing things. It's a dog that's trained for certain. I mean, you work with these dogs. You train them. You give them some.
Do you think that matters?
I think it makes them more sympathetic. Like, it makes it make less sense to just destroy it because it's somebody else could use a working dog. Go take it to the.
She said this was the dog's second chance, that it had been in a home with another family, and this was its second lifeline. I mean, she executed this dog.
Yeah, well,
right. I mean, is it like, you know, she? But apparently, this happens on farms. That's another argument I've heard, is that this is the kind of thing that happens on farms, and that if you don't own 1,000 acres of land and farm corn or graze cattle on that land, you have no idea what it's like, and that this is just standard operating procedure.
So here's a problem. Years later, she's being considered as a potential running mate.
Yeah, she's not
for Donald J. Trump.
It's not going to happen now. You cannot
because
kill,
she shot a dog, yeah. Right? I mean,
you can't. Well, there's a couple of things here. The lack of judgment, taking the dog to the and shooting it. There's so many options,
right,
for dogs. And I'm sure there's people who are listening right now. Is like, you probably didn't spend time training this dog either, or there are options if you couldn't figure it out to get this dog properly trained or get it a third home. The other lack of judgment that the governor of South Dakota has exhibited with this is she goes and puts it in her memoir. And I'm not sure, first of all, how to get by the editors.
Oh, I'm sure they thought it was funny or cute or.
Oh, just a total misjudgment.
Like, right. And the fact that she's not. The fact that she, like you started this, doubling down on it, like, no, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it. I made a mistake. Don't write about it.
So she's had a week of this.
Trying to make defense or excuses for it.
She's had a week of this controversy and then posts on Twitter, X, that she's doubling down. She followed the law, she said, that she was being a responsible parent. I'm assuming she's talking about. She's got kids, and she doesn't want this dog to harm her kids. She
followed the law.
Followed the law.
There's a law that. Well,
you're an attorney. You tell me.
Cutlet,
I mean, you're not a South Dakota
shoot
attorney.
Your dog?
South Dakota.
South Dakota. I mean, I get. So she didn't shoot it in city limits, but I mean, to animals, you can't just shoot a dog.
Do you know off the top of your head what the rules are here for that? The laws are here in the state? I don't think
you can't just kill your animal.
You can't.
It's called cruelty to animals. It's a misdemeanor. It's not the crime of the century, but it's against the law. South Dakota. Oh, I don't know. Do they say you take your dog out the weeds and shoot him?
When we find out that somebody has abused their dog, we put them on blast.
Sure.
Right. I mean, you can Google stories in Utah where people have been caught abusing, kicking, malnourishing their dogs. Right. And we hope that they land in prison for decades. You know, that's we love dogs. We love our dogs. In fact, if you walked up to me, Greg, and I didn't know who you were and I hadn't known you for 30 years and you had a dog, I wouldn't even ask you what your name was. I would say, what's your
dog's name?
Hey, what's your pooch's
name? You probably would. Right.
And that's how we make best friends as humans. We find somebody with a dog like ours and we become friends with them by default.
But with shelters and
there's so many options.
Places, so many options.
So here's what she said. She was being a responsible parent, a dog owner, and a neighbor. But I think this is just, I think this is when I saw that, I'm like, I thought my mind immediately went to Wicked Witch of the West. I mean, how horrible. You cannot be the VP candidate now because if Trump wants to get away from this discussion, he'll never get away from this discussion. This will follow her everywhere.
Think about the optics of this. Your dog's over there, 100 yards away. You've got your rifle in your hand, and you pull down, and you put it in the sights, and the dog looks at you. I mean, are you really going to pull the trigger? The dog's tail is wagging. The dog is looking at you for a little.
This wouldn't even cross my mind.
Like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine what goes through your mind as you're pulling the trigger, thinking, oh, here goes Fido.
So why is Utah Senator Mitt Romney roped into this conversation? It's because he had a dog. He had a dog gate incident. Huffington Post talking to him about the situation back in the 80s. So apparently, here's what the Huffington Post wrote. These are his words, not mine. The Utah senator also pushed back on the notion that Noam's tale of slaughter in her upcoming political memoir is anything like him being criticized for tying his dog, Seamus, to the roof of a family car during a cross-country trip.
Wasn't there a movie where they did that with the grandma?
You're thinking of this.
You can't put her up on that roof.
Yes, he can.
You want me to strap her to the hood? What's the difference? She'll be fine. It's not as if it's going to rain or something.
National Lampoon's Vacation.
And it rained.
And Edna passed away during the cross-country trip.
So want her in the car.
Griswold puts her on the roof.
Right.
Yeah. But to clarify with Senator Mitt Romney, this is in the 80s, and it was, I guess, they made dog kennels or they created some sort of a dog kennel. They had a dog kennel on the roof of the car. That to me does not. That to me does not qualify as the same.
No.
as shooting your dog.
But it's still a little bit.
But this followed him.
Right.
This followed. So clearly, like I said,
Hope it wasn't in the middle of winter or in the middle of summer, and the dog's.
It sounds like it was a cross country.
Nice,
yeah, right. summer trip. But his response to the Huffington Post is, "I didn't eat my dog. I didn't shoot my dog. I love my dog, and my dog loved me."
That's why it was on the roof of the car.
That was on the right. But I mean, I think, you know, for this, I think this is far different than what happened with Senator Mitt Romney's situation. But that still, that incident plagued
and
him.
He didn't kill his dog.
It was just a way to transport your dog.
Cruel, right. Yeah.
I mean, you run out of room in the car or you got an animal that gets sick. I could see, you know, we got to come up with something. I mean, it's probably not we wouldn't stand for it today, just so I'm sure he knows that.
How do you transport your dog?
Well, my dog passed away. Thanks for reminding
me. Oh, sorry about that. Yes.
No, it's all right. Wow.
But it wasn't at the...
Oh, well, Riley?
By gunshot wound.
No.
Okay,
no, I would make him sit in the back seat. He'd always want to, he'd either want to sit in the front seat or in my lap while I was driving. Well, clearly in my lap is so dangerous. And he was a 50-pound... Blue Heeler mix,
okay.
Probably a mix, but so he was a big, I call him thick, you know, he's a thick dog, but he wanted to be my lap dog. So, or he'd want to sit, he'd run a ride shotgun, no pun intended, and help navigate the road with me from the passenger seat. I didn't like that because I was afraid if I had a slam on the brakes,
Fluffy, you know, would land on the floor.
He would absolutely go. Or
right.
If we got into a crash through no fault of mine, of course, he would go through the windshield.
Right.
And so I put up one of those, you can buy them, you know, one of those contraptions that they make
like
now.
Like the police cars have?
Yeah.
To keep the bad guys from
grabbing them. But it would just cover between the two seats.
Right.
You know, I didn't have a bench seat. They stopped making those, you know, 30 years ago. So I had bucket seats or whatever they call them. And then there was this opening and he would always want to crawl through the opening. If I put my purse there, and my purse is like this massive bag, right?
Suitcase, right.
Yeah, I would be able to block him too, so that was an option. But no, I would absolutely never.
Put the dog on the roof.
Well, I wouldn't. Oh yeah, that one too. I don't. I think that was. I must have been out of desperation, but I certainly would never, ever. When O'Reilly died, he died in my arms at home, you know, from cancer. And I was sick about it for a year. I miss him.
We should have brought
this up. I miss him. So let's take phone calls. 801-575-TALK. 801-575-TALK. Here's the question, okay? Here's the question. I want, what's your dog's name and what you love most about your dog? I'm not going to go dark on this. I don't want to go down that, like, would you ever do that? No, I don't. I want to give our dogs lots of love on this Friday. So give me a call. Let's brag about our dogs. 801-575-TALK next.
Dave and Dujanovic. Dave and Dujanovic.
My co-host Greg Skordas and I putting the governor of South Dakota on blast, like the rest of America is, because she's doubled down on shooting her dog Cricket. Her dog's name is Cricket. Took it out to a gravel pit. Said it was behaving badly. That it had eaten, I think, some chickens and bit her hand. It was a working dog. And Greg, she shoots the dog, kills
Cricket.
This dog, Cricket.
How do you shoot Cricket? I mean, come on, a working dog.
Well, she said she acted within the law. She's doubling down. This comes out in her political memoir. The wild thing about this gets even crazier is she writes about it in a book, and no editor says, you know, there's not a lot that unites us in America, but dogs definitely do. We ought to take this out. We ought to not put this in your book.
Especially if you have any plans in the future for politics or just
I think she's done
for
now.
People to
at least,
love you.
At least as a vice presidential candidate to run alongside.
I shot my dog.
That would follow
so that's
her.
That's how people will remember her now.
Yeah, absolutely. 801-575-TALK. 801-575-TALK. Edie, hi.
Hi.
We wanted you. What's your dog's name? We want to send a message to South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem about how much we love our dogs.
Right, in Utah.
I would imagine that you love your dog, and that's why you're calling.
I love my dog so much. Her name is Lucy.
Aww.
She's a golden doodle. And every morning I'm grateful for her. She's gotten me through some tough times, and I've got some teenagers still at home, and she keeps everybody, or tries to. She keeps me on an even keel when I'm dealing with things at home. And I love her so much. She's just so precious to me.
Well, if you haven't done it already, Edie, head over to our KSL News Radio Facebook page, share a picture of Lucy, and tell us why you love her. We've got tons of posts there. We posted this earlier this morning. Let's get to, is it Shanna?
Shauna.
Hi. I'm having a hard time seeing things today, so forgive me if
I
don't catch
so
your name. So talk. What's your dog's name, and what do you love about your dog?
The dog's name was Tippy.
Uh-oh.
What is it?
She was a family teenage dog. I'm 75, and she was our dog when I was a teenager.
And what was it about the dog that you loved so much?
Well, an example, she was a puppy. And I ended up hospitalized with a serious illness.
Hmm.
And she started wasting away. She wouldn't eat. And thank heavens, down in Phoenix, it was the first floor. And my brother could bring her, who couldn't come and visit me, and bring her to the window and let her know I was all right. And then she started eating again. My only regret is when she ended up with mitral valve issues, I didn't get her to the vet in time to put her down before she suffered.
Yeah.
It was overnight.
Yeah. Thanks for your phone call. I want to make sure we got a ton of phone calls here. So I want to give time to James in Provo. What's your pup's name?
Well, my grandmother's dog's name was Feisty, and our dog was named Spoofy, and they were both named for their traits and all that. They would kind of be elusive but friendly and everything. They would always kind of hide, but yet when they want food, they were always there for you.
What kind of dogs?
Well, Feisty was Cocker Spaniel, and Spoofy was Big Beagle.
Spoofy and Feisty. Good names. Great names.
Hey,
thank you.
Thanks so much for your phone call. Greg scored us in today for Dave Noriega. Greg often co-hosting KSL at 9 from 7 to 9 right here at KSL News Radio. And we're talking about For the Love of Dogs after South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem has been put on blast all week long, then doubles down recently just doubles down on X about the shooting.
I did it legally.
Yeah, she did it legally.
I shot cricket legally.
Yeah, she takes this dog out to a gravel pit and shoots it. Now, this happened several years ago, but she ends up writing about it in her political memoir, and then set America on fire because we love our dogs.
And you wonder if Cricket was running, sitting there looking at her, wagging its tail, or what Cricket was actually doing in the moments leading up to Cricket's execution.
Well, she said killing chickens and biting her hand. So yeah, here's one of the text messages. I appreciate the love letters on our text line at 57500. Y'all have been lighting me up all week long. I love going out on a Friday like this. Debbie, you're such a bully.
Uh-oh. For
what? You're such a bully. This is so classic of you, referring to me. Live on a farm. And this is how some animals are put down. So let's talk about that, Greg. Do you think it's not just me overreacting. I mean, okay, but blame me. I'm just the messenger here. But do you think we misunderstand how farm life is, Greg? And so we, we take the dog's side?
Yeah, maybe so. And when you're on a farm, you know, you have working animals, you have domestic animals, dogs, sheep, whatever, you know, and they're working. They're not just pets. They're doing the work of the farm, doing what you need to do. To me, like I said earlier, that kind of makes them more sympathetic. That makes them more, to me, a much more difficult decision to put an animal like that down because they're working, they're servicing you, they're doing your work instead of just sitting on
your
lap.
It may be how it's done on a farm, but most of us don't live on a farm. And,
right.
and that's why America's wound up about this. And that's likely why, if she were to be Donald Trump's VP nominee and,
That'll come out in the...
You're never going to be able to get away from that on the campaign trail. There will be memes forever online on social media.
And the voters get hung up on the goofiest things, but... The vice president candidate shot her dog?
We love our dogs.
Maybe so.
Well, I saw she made a post on social media... Greg, and we got to wrap this segment. She made a post on social media about her new book coming out, which, you know, it's a big deal, right? She writes a memoir, and I just went straight to the comments, and everybody in the comments was like, "How's Cricket? Where's Cricket?
Uh-oh.
Have you killed other animals as well?" So she'll never be able to run away from that story. Straight ahead, middle schools in Norway ban cell phones, and the results are amazing. Parents, you're going to be begging your school to ban cell phones in the classroom next.
Dave and Dejanovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
After I read the results of this study out of Norway, they look at 400 different middle schools that have banned cell phones or like not allowed them in the classroom. If this had come out when my kids were in public school, Greg, I would have called the school and said, how fast and what do I need to do to get cell phones out of the classroom?
Yeah, and what we're talking about is a study that was done in Norway of middle school kids, and they did a study of banning cell phones for a while and to see how that affected what they were doing and how they were performing.
We're going to speak in just a moment to a high-performance brain specialist, Dr. Lee Richardson, in just a second about the results of the study and also what she sees, with cell phone use in kids. But imagine, like last night, I'll give you an example. I had my cell phone in another room, and I felt so free and so good about that. I didn't check it for several hours. And what happened in the results, what they see in the results of this study that they did of boys and girls in middle school is, I think it's phenomenal, the results. Girls' GPAs increase. Boys, not so much, but girls do. That's awesome because I think when we can get some in the crowd ahead of the pack, they'll bring up the rest of the pack. They also notice less incidents of bullying. That's not surprising.
That makes a lot of sense because I think that's what it really happens on social media. And if you're packing your phone around and other kids are as well, it's a perfect avenue for that type of misconduct, bullying. And it happens on the internet more than it does, you know, the old bullying that we sort of, we had phones,
you're pushing each other over in the playground.
Right, right.
There's also some really great information about mental health. We'll get to that in just a moment. But we know that Governor Spencer Cox has been, I'll say, nicely asking for Utah school districts to consider keeping cell phones out of classrooms? I mean, locking them up outside in a locker, you know, or something like that, and not allowing them in classrooms?
What I'm doing is I'm asking teachers, I'm asking principals and superintendents to do what the data says we should all be doing. And I think we know this inherently, and that is that we shouldn't have cell phones in the classroom. They are a disruption. They're doing incredible damage to our teens, their mental health, and it's making it harder for our kids to perform well. Now, look, there are schools doing this. Lots of schools already doing this in the state, and what we've seen is a tremendous uptick in outcomes. Kids are performing better on tests. There are fewer disruptions in class. Better behaviors, less mental health problems. It's just a win-win all the way around.
But he starts that with, "I'm asking." I mean, just make the order. You're the governor. Let's do it. Go to the school board and say, "We are banning cell phones in schools now."
Hi,
I'm asking teachers to do this because they're not going to do it.
Well, because it would be maybe unpopular. They get a lot of pushback from the parents. Dr. Richardson, good morning.
Good morning. I've so enjoyed listening to your conversation. I'm like, yeah, right. Need to get it.
I would have welcomed this. I think there's just a lot of push and pull between kids and parents. And sometimes we still love it sometimes as parents when the authorities say, that's a no-go. Can't bring cell phones to schools. But for now, let's keep the conversation with the mental health results. Even when this study showed that there were less visits to psychologists for these kids that didn't bring cell phones into classrooms, right?
Absolutely. The studies show that there was actually a 60% reduction in the visits, psychological visits, when they put these. And 60%, that's huge. When they, they just took away the cell phones. And my thoughts on that, and I think one of the reasons why the girls saw a greater change in their GPA is what they use their cell phones for. They use it for social media. And anytime, to me, social media has created a comparative society, because anytime you compare, you got a winner and you got a loser. And sometimes, I've worked with young adolescents and I said, you're the winner, but they don't see it that way. So, and I think what boys use cell phone for is more video games. But when you compare and you don't feel like your dress is as nice, or you don't feel like you went on as great a vacation, that hurts your self-confidence. It hurts your self-esteem. That creates anxiety, some depression, all kinds of stuff. And not just psychological, but the body keeps score of everything going on in the brain, that can create some physical problems too.
That's right. And Dr. Richardson, let me ask you another question. This study also found that with both boys and girls, they experienced, this is an astronomical number, 43 to 46% less bullying after putting their phones away. Are you surprised by that at all?
No, I'm actually not, because I find that sometimes, video games can leave you in an agitated state. Oh, I didn't get that, And so can social media. Oh my gosh, nobody likes my post, and I posted it yesterday. And that creates a little agitation. And when we get agitated, we're quicker to react. And I do think a lot of bullying is intentional, but I also think some bullying is just overreacting at the wrong time to the wrong situation.
Dr. Lee Richardson, she's a high-performance brain specialist, a licensed professional counselor, and the founder of the Brain Performance Center. I really appreciate you joining the show on this, because I think this study is just resounding that they look at 400 different middle schools in Norway where kids don't bring cell phones into the classroom. What do you find when you talk to kids or you talk to parents is driving us to allow kids to continue to bring cell phones to school? Is it an addiction? Is it a fear we're going to not be able to get a hold of our kids?
I think it's both. And my biggest concern with cell phones was it will become the newest addiction. And I've talked with families, and sometimes when it's a single parent and they don't have a backup system, There is no support. They feel like they have absolutely got to be able to reach their child when they need to. Maybe they got out of a situation that was somewhat threatening, and that fear of not being able to reach their child is there. So I think that does play into it. But I think for a lot of people, it's freedom, you know, it's freedom of rights. And what I have seen in some families is if you're going to limit the amount of time that the children use a cell phone, that means you have to model that same behavior as parents. Mm. And not everybody puts their phone down for 3 or 4 hours and feels so free and so good. You know, for some people, adults, you know, when you look at the Gen Zers, what they grew up with, they grew up with a cell phone in their hand, and look at their depression and look at their anxiety rate.
Right.
Wow. That's great information. I think this will help a lot of Utah families see things differently. Thank you so much, Dr. Lee Richardson, joining us live on the line, founder of the Brain Performance Center, talking about this study out of Norway. 400 middle schools, that's a ton of middle schools.
I'm actually glad somebody did that study. It's the kind of thing we should do. And I think it's the kind of thing that leads into what Governor Cox talked about earlier, which is, hey, we ought to really take a look at this. If there are some hard findings, there is some evidence that it actually helps students in some way, we ought to consider it.
I did appreciate that the governor had the ask, unlike you, Dave, and not the outright ban. I did appreciate his approach to this in many ways, because I do think if we can keep things into the local school districts, I mean, it might be a lot different in, for example, rural Utah. I don't know. I don't live in rural Utah than what we feel like along the Wasatch Front. I mean, if you've got your kid going on a bus for 45 minutes to be bused to school, it's going to look a lot different than if they're walking across the street to their middle school. But I think
check the phone at the door. I mean, by all means, have it on the bus, have it on your walk, have it in your car, whatever you're doing.
Couldn't agree more.
But as soon as you walk in the classroom, put it in the cubby.
So let's take live phone calls, 801-575-TALK. Parents, are you willing to, you know, create a situation at schools where kids are leaving their phones all day long in a lockup at school? In a lockup. I'm not asking them leave them at home, but in a lockup. Can we bend on that? 801-575-TALK. 801-575-TALK next.
David Dujanovic. David Dujanovic.
I just caught this story in the Salt Lake Tribune. Greg Skorda sent today for Dave Noriega. Very familiar with what has been going on at the University of Utah with on-campus protests about the Israel-Hamas war and the deaths in the Gaza Strip. Well, the Tribune reporting that the University of Utah faculty are demanding now, and there's 120 faculty members that the Trib says have signed a petition. They're demanding that future student protests not be met with police violence. And this comes after officers, of course, we're talking all week long in riot gear, Greg, are showing up at the University of Utah, staging at the University of Utah. And this all begins on Monday night, a week or so after the protests around the nation had begun, and several people were arrested. And it looked to me, like watching the videos unfold up there, that it became mayhem up there. What do you think about this latest development?
You know, you would think that the University of Utah, and we haven't seen the level of aggression by law enforcement there that we have in other universities. I mean, we're watching some video right now, UCLA, where they're literally tearing down barriers. And so it's becoming a more physical confrontation. We haven't seen that at the University of Utah. So I'm a little bit surprised by the pushback by faculty, but maybe they're trying to avoid what's happening at some of these other universities from happening here. We've heard, Debbie, that there have been nationwide over 2,000 arrests at 40 universities over this matter. And it was only a matter of time before it came to Utah. It was only a matter of time before it came to the University of Utah, and Salt Lake police and university police were going to be called on to at least have some reaction to it.
Here's just a small snippet of what we saw unfold up there. And you and I talked about this earlier in the week, what the to me, with the change in the moment and how this became a bigger deal and it escalated was over the tents that got pitched at, you know, at 11 o'clock at night that night. That's when police move in. I disagreed that I really felt strongly that if this is just over pitching tents, but then there was some pushback to me that saying, look, they look like these protesters were going to be staying for a while, that they were bringing in supplies and that maybe things would escalate even more. I wasn't all in on the fact that it was just an encampment up there that caused this police response, Greg.
And I think these universities, including the University of Utah, have to decide, Debbie, where you draw the line. I mean, peaceful protest, if you're up there at President's Circle and you're walking around with signs and others are allowed to walk past you and go to their classes and do things that are otherwise they would do at the campus, that's one thing. But if you're preventing students from getting from point A to point B, if you're occupying a building like has happened at some other universities.
Not here, though.
Right. Exactly right. The camping part, I can kind of understand. Like, don't pitch a tent at the University of Utah. I mean,
But it's 11 o'clock at night. I mean, I would feel differently about this. It was 11 o'clock in the morning and students couldn't get to class. And there's actually, you know, we do have, what is it, Title VI? I can't remember off the top of my head, of the Civil Rights Act. You cannot impede people from going to class, and you can't make students feel unsafe on campus. I just have a hard time thinking 11 o'clock at night at President's Circle that was going on. It clearly wasn't. They're not holding classes then. Now, if they'd stayed overnight and they were getting faces of students, that's a whole different story. If they had breached buildings, if they were occupying President Randall's office, but that didn't happen, Greg.
So what you're saying is a modest police presence to keep the peace.
Well, surround the buildings if you're worried they're going to breach the buildings.
You could live with
that. Yeah, I could live with that. But then, you know, the protesters aren't, you know, they haven't picked up their tents and gone home by 6 o'clock in the morning. But we had, of course, you know, many were arrested. I think 20. Next morning, our Adam Small was up there at President's Circle, and his report to us was, doesn't look like anything happened up here. Totally cleaned up. Now, I'm assuming that's because they did so by force.
Must have done its job correctly.
I just thought it was a horrible look. I just thought it was a horrible look. But here's what the faculty up there are asking. And it's like I said, it's not one or two. It's 120. They ask that police officers not be present at any peaceful protests at the U from now on.
Well, that's a stretch.
I would agree.
I mean, what's wrong with the police presence at a protest? I mean, if you're talking about public safety, if you're talking about just the presence itself, and I as you know, I work with police a lot, but just the presence at a public protest might keep it as a peaceful protest. Just the presence of police officers. And I'm not saying in full-on SWAT gear with the shields and you know, guns or whatever. That's over the top. But police presence, having officers there, walking around, talking to the kids, making sure that there's nothing, nobody's impeded, nobody's hurting somebody. I don't know that there's a problem with that.
I thought, of course, graduation was last night. I know in the past, I haven't looked it up. They do smaller graduation ceremonies at different times for different colleges up there.
Each college has its own, right?
Yeah, which I wish all the graduation ceremonies that I went to were smaller up at the U. No offense. Those are just...
It's a big school.
Right. Yeah, it's a big school and it would go on forever. I thought that... Now, my thinking is this, that school is going to be out, you know, now because of graduation, mostly. I mean, I'm sure there's some summer school classes. I know there's summer school classes because I took them when I was in college. You go to summer school. Yeah, my daughter takes them too. Some of those are online. I thought that these would be winding down. I know last night there were some protests as well. Just since you're an attorney here in Utah and you know the law so well, I mean, unless these protesters start beating up on police or something like that. What laws are they breaking? And, you know, can't camp on a lawn law?
That's one. And that's a local ordinance within the University of Utah is the no camping ordinance. Misdemeanors, disorderly conduct, if they're making a lot of noise and making it impossible for people to get around, you could have riot if they're actually doing that. I mean, these are all misdemeanors, and somebody, you know, throwing a can at a police officer, that's assault on a peace officer. That's going to be more serious. So there are crimes that could be committed here. There are crimes that are allegedly being committed. We've had people get cited, and people are going to be charged based on what's happening at the University of Utah. Mostly misdemeanor offenses. Hopefully, and really, I think, Debbie, it's an opportunity for police to take somebody out of that environment. You're under arrest. I'm going to take you. I'm going to go book you at the jail, take 5 minutes, and then I'm going to turn you loose. Then you're not at the campus raising heck anymore. You know what I mean? So I do think there's some benefit to some of these minor citations just to quell the problem.
Well, we had Rabbi Zippel speaking on behalf of the Jewish community on the air with us yesterday as we talked about this. And I thought he laid it out really, really, really well that, you know, if kids of Jewish faith feel unsafe up there, students up there say absolutely not. And the feeling is that some of them did feel unsafe. You're crossing a line. I would agree with them. If it's a peaceful protest and they're protesting the, you know, the mass deaths that are going on in the Gaza Strip and the no end in sight, we up to this war between Israel and Hamas. I followed up on that as well. I think there's room for that kind of that's what we do in America is we protest what we feel are wrongs that are being done even around the world. There has been a lot made about the fact that many of these people who are protesting on campus are not students. I didn't think that was a big deal. I don't think that's a big deal, but hold your thought, Greg. We're going to talk about that next, and we're also going to get an update on what's going on across the nation with campus protests from News Nation Live.
The KSL Giveathon. Be a smile maker for the kids at Primary Children's Hospital.
I love it when it's Giveathon time. It's such an important time here at KSL News Radio and for the entire community. And I want you to meet Liz. In fifth grade, she moved. She had to start over making friends. Oh, that's so hard. And it was giving her panic attacks.
My name is Kyla. I am mother to three. Liz is my middle child, 17. She is the most kind-hearted child. She has a wicked sense of humor, quick-witted, and talented. The way she can express herself through art is pretty incredible.
When I was seven, so second grade, we moved from Nevada to Utah. That was a very hard thing for me, but things did not really pick up until fifth grade when we moved to this house, and I lost all of my elementary school friends.
The chaos of junior high just made everything come forward for her.
And at that point, I was first kind of coming into school avoidance and anxiety. I don't want to do this. I'm tired of being different than all the other kids.
She was missing school constantly. She struggled every day to go. She would have a full-blown panic attack, running through the house, hitting herself in the head. I can't do this. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. After we'd had about the third one of those panic attacks, I knew we had to get some help.
With Primary Children's Behavioral Health, we really believe in the importance of getting kids to the right treatment at the right time in the right place.
I contacted the behavioral health unit. The initial contact up there was with Dr. Kaplan, and she was just so welcoming.
She talked to me like an adult, which I really liked.
A lot of the therapy is teaching parents how to cope because we need it, and having those tools was huge.
It has led me up to a point where I'm very happy, and I'm really, really proud of myself. I feel very fulfilled.
She's doing great. She's on track to graduate. She's talking about a future. She's talking about things she wants to do when she's grown. I can see clearly now, rain is gone. I would just tell anybody that is struggling, if you have the ability to get up there, do it, because they are caring, they're kind, they're not going to judge you for where you've been. It was an absolute lifeline for us. I mean, they saved my kid, and that's something I could never repay. It's gonna be a bright,
and happy to report, with the help of therapy through Primary Children's, Liz has regained her happiness. So here's what I need you to do. Donate now by visiting kslkids.com, or here's another option. You can text the word SMILE to 57500.
Dave and Dujanovic. Special coverage of the top national story.
In a moment, we're going to be live with News Nation. They're going to give us an overview of what is going on around the nation with the campus protests as we head into yet another weekend. Just wild protests going on all over the country, including right here in Utah, where a number of people were arrested after a protest on Monday night.
I walked out and several other students did just to make it clear that we do not stand with Taylor Randall. We do not stand with his lack of support for his students.
And continued in some ways last night during the graduation ceremony, Greg Scordis, and today for Dave Noriega. That was Amanda Azar telling KSL 5 television. She walked out during President Randall's speech last night.
Yeah, and it was only a matter of time, Debbie, before these protests came to the University of Utah. We were all apprehensive and sort of watching closely how the university administration was going to react, how law enforcement was going to react, and how the students were going to behave, because it's run the whole gamut around this, around the country, from police in full riot gear at some universities to, hey, let's just let it go until it gets out of hand at other universities. And every school and every law enforcement agency is trying to balance, what do we do? How do we keep this at the peaceful protest level and prevent it from getting to much more?
Rich McHugh with News Nation live on the line. I'm looking right now. It looks as though it's in many news organizations, Rich, reporting that 2,000 people have now been arrested. What do you have an update for us?
That's right. And another, let's see, I think it was 14 at NYU this morning and 42 at the New School. That was just this morning. I was at both Columbia and the new, and NYU this morning. At NYU, when the actual police came in and took down the encampment and arrested these folks, it's just it's spreading all over New York City. Although it's quieted down today, and Columbia is a bit quiet. It was a crazy week up there. I'll say that, especially Tuesday night.
Rich, we have seen a lot of different reaction by law enforcement and by university administration. What seems to be the most effective, or what have you seen that has worked out, if anything, or are these just haphazard, what's happening at some of these universities?
Well, you know, I've been covering this now for 3 weeks. I've been at Columbia for 3 weeks, and what wasn't working was what they were doing. Like, what they initially did was they brought in the police, arrested a bunch of people, and then the encampment got built back up again immediately. They didn't secure the school, and then Columbia basically ceded to their demands. They made a statement that we're not going to bring the police back in. We've heard you. We've heard the faculty, and we're not going to do that again. And so they painted themselves into a corner. But now, you know, after the protesters broke into Hamilton Hall, and then the NYPD, and then they finally called the NYPD back in, and then they secured the school. They arrested the protesters. You know, we found that 29% of them, the NYPD found that 29% of them at Columbia, and I think about close to 60% at CUNY were not students, meaning they were outside agitators, I guess you could call it. And that's something that the NYPD has been warning all along, and here it is confirmed. Some of these people have lengthy criminal records, or history of agitation, in the past 15 years.
Rich McHugh of News Nation, thanks for jumping on the line with us. We'll let you go. We know you're covering that story, and we'll keep us updated here as well at KSL News Radio out of New York. That's Rich McHugh with News Nation. He pointed out the outside agitators. We talked about that briefly.
Yeah, you had a little bit different take than I did. I thought that were not students, look, maybe not as sympathetic.
If you're going to peacefully protest on public property, I have no issue whatsoever
whether you're a
paying student or not. That'd be like, for me, that'd be like saying, oh, you can't protest on the steps of the Capitol unless you work for the governor's office or you're a lawmaker. I mean, I see protests all the time. And it went to Arizona State University back in the day. We had protests. I don't know how many were actual students. It was a huge campus.
But what do you make of Rich's comments that some of these are people with criminal histories, that they're really just there to agitate?
Are they committing a crime on the scene? Look, we always talk about, well, you know, we shouldn't. What are we going to do with people with criminal histories? They're walking out all over our community. You can't say get off the sidewalk because you committed a bank robbery 10 years ago. We don't do that.
I think the notion is, though, Debbie, that some of these people aren't really cared much about the protest itself. They just want to go you know, raise Cain.
They want to go, well, and if they cross the line and they break into buildings, right. It's a totally different story. I'm not advocating for any of those folks at all. But what I am saying is that if you aren't involved in anything other than, you know, if you're just up there to peacefully protest, I have no issues with that. I don't care if you pitch a tent. And by the way,
or if you're a student,
if you're a student, I'm a parent who's paid exorbitant tuition fees for her daughter to go to the University of Utah. I'm also been a taxpayer in this state.
And you would support her peacefully protesting?
Absolutely, I would.
She wasn't in class.
My kids know. I mean, I raised them this way.
Right.
There is a very, very bright line.
Right.
You know, if you want to peacefully protest, look, I've been an advocate of the First Amendment.
Your whole career.
My whole career. I'm a news reporter. Right. I don't want any government interference in telling me what I need to report, what I need to do. Now, if I was out there committing crimes, running around, you know, breaking into people's homes to get interviews, of course I would be hauled off to jail and fired. That's different. I have no issue. The University of Utah faculty, 120 members now signing this petition asking that law enforcement stay away from the peaceful protests. We'll see how that shakes out throughout the day right here at KSL News Radio.
Dave and Dejanovic. The following preview has been rated G and is appropriate for all audiences.
Greg scored us in today for Dave Noriega. We're going to be talking to Andy and Steve in just a moment. Because from 11 to 1, they take over the microphones with the movie show. What's the last movie you saw, Greg?
Oh, boy. I can't even think of what the last movie I saw was.
So the question of the day. Hi, guys. Are you there?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Your question of the day is, remind me, isn't it about music and movies?
Yes. Well, you know, so this is where it came about. So The Fall Guy is the big movie of the week, right? And it's based on an 80s TV show. And I spent the whole movie waiting for the Fall Guy theme song to somehow be used in it. And they didn't use it till the credits.
Dang it.
But Steve was impressed that I knew most of the words to the Fall Guy theme song, even though it's from 40 years ago.
So, guys, I have a clip of that. Let me play for you.
That's me, Colt Sievers, and this is my hero's journey. Okay, I'm not the hero of this story.
Oh.
I'm just a stunt
guy. I'm getting chills. I love that song. And that's the theme song?
No, the theme song is the Fall Guy that Lee Majors used to sing.
It's kind of a country.
But that
thing.
Is a good song in the clip. It is. It's kind of a country sounding thing, as many TV shows were in the early 80s. So, but we got thinking, what is a song in a movie that was just so perfect that you can never associate it with anything else? Now, the Fall Guy is obvious because it's the Fall Guy, and what else are you going to associate it with? But there's other songs from other movies that are just, you hear the song and you think of that movie.
So we're going to let Greg go first since he's our guest today. Greg.
Okay, we're going to play a soundbite for you, and you have to tell us what movie this reminds you of.
Okay. I got it.
Ready?
Fantasia.
Robert Duvall, On the Beach of Vietnam. Yeah. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Name that movie.
Apocalypse Now.
There you go.
I was thinking a Disney kind of a movie, but Greg was going much darker and older.
Well, that's good.
Okay, I've got one for you. Hold on. I got to find it. I'm going to play my obvious one first that I'll never unsee. When did it end? All the enjoyment. Barbie. I love this song.
But that's the one you pick of all those songs in Barbie? That's the one you associate with Barbie?
It's a beautiful song.
I think Billie Eilish and her brother did an awesome job writing that song. But let me take you
back. They won the Oscar for it. So.
Yeah, they did. They did an awesome job. But this is even how they wrote it. They went and saw the movie first. They had a screening of it. And then they went home. And I think they wrote it in just a matter of hours. And they just knocked it out of the park. It's a beautiful song. But this is, I want to take you back to the 80s with this one.
What I'm talking about.
Greg?
Okay.
Which one is it?
Flashdance.
Oh, right.
Don't you cry when you hear that song? Just thinking about that moment when she nails it on the dance recital.
I love that. I love that movie. I love the song. I was sad when she passed away. The singer,
Irene Cara.
I said Cara, but maybe it's Cara. How about this one, guys? This is a song I've always hated.
You hated this song?
It's a great movie genre, but it's a terrible song.
You guys like it?
But it has the beat. It gets you excited.
And when you hear that song, you know that the mood of the movie is about to change.
Your producer, our former producer, he left the show. He decided he was had enough of me, so he left. Gus Gustavo. I had to ask him yesterday. He's probably saying, "No, that's not true." I had to ask him yesterday. I don't even remember what movie that was from. I just didn't remember.
It's Rocky III.
It's Rocky, wasn't it?
Yeah, no,
Rocky.
It's Rocky III.
Didn't you think there should be
in the first one?
No. Gonna Fly Now is in the first one.
Oh, that's right. That's right. How about the same artist?
I think there should be a ban. There should have been a ban after the second Rocky. I think most, what do they
call it? Whoa, Deb.
Prequels.
Whoa. Rocky ended the Cold War, Deb. Rocky ended the Cold War.
I will break you.
How about this one?
That's a good one. Back to the Future.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are good. See, I didn't know that one. I really didn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why we host the movie show, I think.
So quick takes on Fall Guy without giving too much away, guys, because I know you're coming up in about 4 minutes here.
It's fun. And Deb, can you believe it? This is officially the start of summer movie season.
What?
First weekend in May is now summer movie season.
It's kind of like we start celebrating Christmas around Halloween. That's sort of that same idea.
It's called Creep, and it's there. But I thought it was, I mean, just generally, it was fun.
Yeah, it's a good time, no question.
Okay, is it worth seeing this weekend? Like, do I need to, you know, knock people out of the way to get...
Do you like Ryan Gosling?
I really think he did so well. I thought he was amazing in Barbie.
Yeah, I'll always associate that song with Barbie now since I saw them do that.
The Matchbox 20 cover.
He plays it with the same fun attitude that he played Ken and Barbie. That's one of the things I liked about it, was the way he just seems to be enjoying himself, and it really translates to me as a viewer.
And he and Emily Blunt get along famously.
Right.
Aren't they married?
No.
Oh,
Emily
not?
Blunt's married to John Krasinski from The Office.
Oh,
and Ryan
right.
Gosling's married to Eva Mendes.
Actually, they're not married.
They're not. Oh.
Who's not? John and
Eva. I thought they got married.
Eva and Ryan are, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, I'm looking it up right now. Let's see. Greg, what's the legal website to look up people? No, I'm just kidding.
All good stuff.
They're all legit.
You guys are fun. I love listening to you from 11 to 1. Yeah, I'm going to go sit over across the street in the Crown Burger line and listen to y'all. So have a good weekend. Have a great movie show. I love what you guys are doing with the show. It's super fun. You got lots of great energy. Look forward to your... what do you call them? Reviews. I was going to say evaluations and assessments.
Evaluations.
Our breakdowns.
Of the Fall Guy.
And thanks for picking up on Apocalypse Now. That was good. You guys are young, and I didn't know that you'd remember that one, but that was great.
That's adorable.
Well, some of us are young on this show.
All right. Greg and I are going to spend the next 30 seconds chit-chatting about what's coming up at 1 o'clock today. GOP nominee for governor Phil Lyman and his wannabe lieutenant governor in court today. Greg, your quick takes on that.
Arguments in front of the judge on whether or not his lieutenant governor can and will be on the ballot for the June 25th primary are being heard by a third district court judge at 1 o'clock today. Hopefully we'll get a ruling today. I mean, the judge has had all the briefing, all the arguments, all the pleadings presented to him, and I think they're just going to sort of make their final push to the judge, and whether he issues a ruling today or in the future, this has to be done fairly quickly because the ballots are going out.
Quick 10 seconds. If he doesn't get a ruling in his favor, or if the state doesn't get a ruling in their favor,
somebody might go up to the Supreme Court, the Utah Supreme Court. This is state law, state constitution that drives this. Nothing to do nationally. Okay. We'll decide.
Well, I'll be tuning in this afternoon to Jeff Kaplan's Afternoon News because I want to know exactly what happens with this hearing and how this shakes out for Phil Lyman and Lane Bangeter. So make sure you're tuning in and also checking us out online at kslnewsradio.com.